Hi, my name is Brian Luke Seward, and welcome to a informal, cozy fireside chat on the topic of coping with stress in crazy times and how to adapt to change. I'm laughing because these are definitely some crazy times here. In fact, people would say that these are the winds of change that have been forecasted and predicted for quite some time. And what I notice, what I sense, listen to the news, and I don't listen very often for long periods of time, but I sense people are exhausted, a lot of anger out there still, nearly a year into this pandemic, a lot of anxiety, a lot of sense of isolation and alienation, and people are really just energy depleted, and I think also in many cases bored. So I thought what I'd do is just take some time to share with you a couple of things, and these are reminders of what we know. However, it's always good to hear them again. Some of these include some insights from what I call ageless wisdom, and maybe even some nice tips too to kind of help navigate through these challenging times. So let's first state the obvious. Yeah, there's a lot of anxiety out there. Let there be no doubt about that. Definitely a lot of anxiety. And that's natural. A lot of fear of the unknown. When things are uncertain, and they really are right now, there tends to be a lot of anxiety about, you know, what's going to happen next. And I think what makes these times so interesting, and of course the big word is unprecedented, is that we have so many changes coming at once. You know, typically people can deal with one or two changes, but we have biblical changes on a daily basis, and that tends to be energy depleting. So and with these changes, there's also a lot of unmet expectations. And of course, the minute you have unmet expectations, then you're going to have some frustration and some anger. In fact, what I've been teaching for years is that every episode of anger is the result of an unmet expectation. So we have lots of those to go around, and the best thing we can do is just acknowledge that, yeah, that didn't get met, and then let that go and move on. What I've also noticed, and perhaps you have too, is that there's just really a huge sense of grieving right now. And the grieving is a result of these unmet expectations, or the death of unmet expectations, I think we could fairly say. And so with that, we need to acknowledge the fact that, yeah, there's some loss, and loss is painful, and there's a lot of ways in which people grieve. In fact, I've come to the realization that no two people grieve the same way about anything. So what you're seeing across the board is this whole spectrum of grieving that comes across in a great many ways. And I just would like to toss out here that ask yourself, is there an unmet expectation that you're encountering, that you're dealing with? And one of the big ones is basically the loss of certain freedoms. You know, as we try and navigate our way through this crisis right now, we have to take some responsibility. And there's this real fine balance between freedom and responsibility. And of course, everyone loves freedom and no one likes responsibility. So there's quite the imbalance going on there. But I think we need to actually acknowledge that indeed, there's some grieving going on with unmet expectations. Everything from not going to your favorite restaurant to maybe not going to a movie because all the theaters are still closed. Fill in the blank with whatever you're going through, and you can see that there's definitely some grieving involved. And grieving is natural. It's part of the natural human experience. However, it's not natural to be in a state of grieving for prolonged periods of time. And so that's where we want to basically try and intercept this at some point and say, let's bring this to full closure and then move on as best we can. So there's a concept about healthy grieving I'd like to share with you, because I think that right now a lot of people have probably either never heard of that or are not aware of that, then there are some things you can do to help the grieving process. And just to kind of toss out a couple of things, you know, we could be here all day on this. And it's very important. You know, a lot of times people give talks on how to cope with stress. there's this idea about you know, unicorns and rainbows, and we're not there yet. we've got some cleanup to do first. And I think it's important to acknowledge that, it's important to every now and then put on some rose-colored glasses and try and look for the optimistic side of things. But we need to deal with the pain and the grieving first. So one of the first things they suggest, and they being experts in the field of psychology, say that we need to acknowledge our pain, acknowledge the fact that we've had gone through some loss, and that's very, very important to do. And then also ask yourself, what are your triggers? What triggers this? Now, it could be any unmet expectation that kind of has a carryover effect. But one of the things that we try and do right now in health psychology is ask, what are your triggers? And what can you do to acknowledge that you may have something coming up today and work around it? Also, one of the things they say is that a grieving process is unique to each person. I think I already mentioned that, but I'll say it again. So everyone grieves differently. And anger is certainly a part of the grieving process. So is whining and what I call is the BMW syndrome, stands for bitch, moan, and whine. And that's natural. And I think it's healthy to do that, but not all the time. So we got to put some healthy boundaries on that, which is going to be a theme of how we cope with stress. So something else I talk about is healthy grieving is support yourself emotionally by taking care of yourself physically. And the three big things to talk about, and we'll probably hear them in the course of several discussions, is good sleep, good nutrition, and some exercise. So that's very important. Another thing they talk about is the idea of establishing rituals. I just call this healthy routines. I heard this one person say yesterday in talking about college students, and college students are going through a lot of this too, that basically we got to establish a new normal, and we got to take responsibility for ourselves with that. And so part of establishing a new normal is to establish some rituals. I mean, this may sound kind of trite, but I'm going to say, like, you know, having a good breakfast is a ritual. Having a good cup of tea, maybe before or after breakfast. Maybe sitting and watching some birds, the bird feeder, before you start your day, just to kind of get that nature connection, natural connection there. And so, of course, another thing they talk about is spend time outdoors. I think when we tend to get caught up in our grieving is when we kind of tend to feel that the world is closing in on us. And one way to negate that is to actually get out in the world, get out in nature, and realize that we're part of a much bigger cycle. And so, you know, questions I ask when I teach nature therapy is, does anyone know today what phase the moon is in? If you can start there, you're doing pretty good. But also, you know, right now it's wintertime and we got a few more months of this to go. But this is good for any time of the year is, you know, what are some of the wildlife you see, in the urban or rural wildlife? You know, what kind of birds come in your backyard? And maybe get some bird feeders to attract some birds in your backyard. Another thing I want to mention to you is in terms of healthy grieving is do some creative outlets. What do you do to nurture your sense of creativity? You know, it could be like something like opening up a cookbook and making a new recipe or something. It could be trying to gather all your photographs on your on your iPhone or something and put them in categories so you can easier to find. But what are some creative outlets? And I think it's really important to engage in creativity, because the whole grieving loss process is a deficit, and we want to try and fill that back up with something, and creativity is a way to do that. Of course, they always mention if you're really in a sense of depression, to try and get some grief counseling. Not a bad idea for anybody. I know that the counselors and therapists are a bit overwhelmed these days because we do indeed have a mental health crisis going on right now with all of this too. We have multiple crises going on. Reminds me of a Ziggy cartoon that he's watching the news and the guy says, the crisis du jour is. And it seems like we have one of these like every hour now, not every day. So I just want to put a word out there about healthy grieving, how important this is, and take some time to grieve. Take some time to actually feel that loss, and then honor that, and then work as you best you can to move beyond it. Now, we don't want to make healthy grieving sound very trite, like, oh, you know, it's nothing, and then move on, because that's not the right way to do it either. But in the same token, we don't want to get caught up in the grieving process for years and years and years. Well, I can't help but think that as I heard where this is all was going with the pandemic, it reminded me of the classic hero's journey template. And I thought to myself, yeah, we're in the middle of this. And so just to kind of review, Joseph Campbell was a cultural mythologist. We lost him about 10, 20, 30 years ago, I suppose, but he left some great wisdom. And one of the things he shared in his research was this idea that every good story has a similar template. And he called this the hero's journey. And the three, I'm going to really simplify this because it's a little more complex than we have time to go into, but he talked about three aspects: the departure, the initiation, and the return home. This is basically, every good story has this. And the departure basically is going from the known into the unknown. And we definitely walked into the unknown with this pandemic. I think that a lot of people, unless they're epidemiologists and have a good background in this, were really caught off guard. And so what happens with the fear of the unknown is, again, fear causes anxiety, and, you know, we don't like this. And so we tend to be a bit reluctant with some of the uncertainty going on. But the hero pursues and persists and continues on. But then comes the stressor of the story, and that's the initiation process. The initiation process is where you are put to the test. And the test in this case here is, you know, how do we overcome the long haul of, you know, a year and a half, 2 years of a pandemic, or the other crises that come along with this, the economic uncertainty, who knows what is going along with this as well, but fill in the blanks. But the initiation is definitely where you're put to the test. Now, what Joseph Campbell reminds us, and those who know me know I'm going to put a good plug in here for spiritual health. What Joseph Campbell reminds us is that we're not alone. We don't do this alone. We've got help from the unseen world, as we tend to describe it in Ireland. And so, these are what he calls the assistance of spiritual aids. We have help from the divine. We have help from a number of you might call it the angelic realm, you might call it your spirit guides, but there's also this sense of divine within us that we also want to tap into and access, and that would be things like our sense of humor, our sense of patience, our sense of optimism, our sense of forgiveness. I call these muscles of the soul, and that's also part of this assistance of spiritual aids as well. So we're given a huge task, a huge, huge task, and we are invited by the universe to accomplish this task and to do it well. And then, of course, then we come back home again. That's the third phase. Well, we are in the midst of the initiation process. I mean, some might say that we clearly still departing from the normal, the age of normal. In fact, you may hear people say, I just want things to go back to the way they were before. And I'm not sure that's ever going to happen. I think we kind of spiral in consciousness. We never actually do a full circle. We kind of like do a circle, but the next time we come back around, we're a little bit higher up because we've risen in consciousness. So the idea is to learn from this and see what we can do to come back home at some level and share what we learned. So I tell you this hero's journey concept because we're in the midst of it. Whether you know it or not, whether you like it or not, we are in the midst of this hero's journey. And we have basically a choice to make. And the choice is that we can actually meet this initiation head on, or we can just sit there and pout. And I think that a lot of people are doing some element of the latter. And I like to say that's not the way to go. You know, so those who know me know I like to give examples. So let me just give you an example of this. And my favorite is The Wizard of Oz. So, you know, Dorothy, not a happy camper in Kansas. She's looking for a way out of town, and bam, she gets one. All of a sudden now she's now in this colorful world of Munchkin Land on her way to Oz. And her initiation was get the witch's broomstick. You know, I don't know about you, but when I was a kid and I first saw this, I was scared to death, thinking like, oh my God, this is horrible. And of course, without doing a spoiler alert, the story does result where she returns back home again. But The Wizard of Oz is just one of many stories. You know, whether you take a look at things like Lord of the Rings, or The Little Mermaid, or Pinocchio, or I'm trying to think about some other contemporary ones. Any good story has these aspects. So, departure, initiation, return home. We are in the initiation stage, and it's not going to be a walk in the park. We got some work to do, and that's one reason we talk about the whole process of adaptation here. So I think sometimes hearing the context, the bigger picture, where we see ourselves right now, kind of helps us deal with with this, because what I learned with Joseph Campbell is that people love stories. You know, take a look at how much time we spend watching, binging now on various TV shows and things. It's because these stories help us navigate our lives at some level, whether consciously or unconsciously, they help us navigate our lives. And so we want to learn from this. And what I typically say is that stories act like a map and compass to get us back home again, because most times in the initiation phase of the hero's journey, we tend to get stuck and we lose our way. And this is actually, you know, written in all kinds of stories as well, but we want to get back home again, because home isn't a place or a building. Home is a metaphor for homeostasis. It's a sense of peace and calm and happiness and bliss. So, the message in the hero's journey, and this is a message of our time right now, is to move from victim to victor. And there's a lot of victimization going on, typically in times of change, and a lot of victimization going on in times of stress as well. Again, stress and change are often thought to be the same thing. And so with regard to this, victimization basically it's a dead end. It's, you know, you're swashing around the whirlpool of negativity, not able to get out because you don't want to get out. It's a lot of sympathy and validation from having the stress of insurmountable odds. But we all have the ability to be a victor, and male or female, we're all heroes in the hero's journey. We have the ability to be a victor, and that's our challenge. That's the real challenge of all of this. And so the real way to do this is to move from fear to love. Fear comes up a lot. The departure comes up a lot. Initiation, I should say, fear and anger. And we want to try and move beyond that to love. And I'm not talking Hollywood romance here. I'm talking what I tend to call the colors in love's rainbow. And I mentioned before as the muscles of a soul, but this is actually all how love tends to manifest in a sense of forgiveness, a sense of patience, a sense of optimism, a sense of humor, which I'm going to try and inject in this talk as best I can. If you hear me laughing, I'm thinking of something funny. So this is the message. How do we move from fear to love? If you get nothing else out of this talk, that is what this is all about. So one thing I'd like to share with you, I've done a couple of presentations over the past several months to various places that were going to have conferences, and then they got changed to Zoom conferences and things like that. But I've been asked to speak to a lot of different people, a lot of groups of people, and I want to mention this concept called the art of subtraction, because when you hear someone talk about ways to cope with stress, you think, oh my God, that's one more thing I got to do in my life today. I don't have time for this. And I think a lot of us think that, you know, we just don't have time to go outside, go for a nature walk. I got too much stuff going on here. I gotta get the kids through their school stuff. I gotta fix dinner. I gotta do this. I gotta do that. Well, what I want to mention first is this concept called the art of subtraction. And this is a concept where it says, before you add anything else to your life and responsibilities, let's subtract something. Let's take something out. And otherwise, we're going to feel more overwhelmed, more exhausted. And this is like putting gasoline on the fire. So I want to ask you right now, what are some things that you can do, like a personal inventory in your life right now, and ask yourself, what are some things you can do where you can actually begin to make some edits? I had this one friend who says, I need to edit my life. And I think she was really talking about this concept called the art of subtraction. So binge watching is a case that comes to mind. A lot of social media is a case in point. Listen to the news is a case in point. One of my exercises in stress management is to have my students do a inventory on how they spend their day. And they're like, I don't have time for this. I don't have time for that. And they see all the time they waste, which is known as time robbers. They're like, oh my God, there's like 3 hours here. So there's definitely ways in which we can make some edits, or what I call as the art of subtraction. And so think to yourself, before you add any more things into your day, and I'm going to give you some things that you can add into your day, or to reconfigure your day, we need to actually do some spring cleaning, or in this case, I suppose we're still in winter, so some winter cleaning. We're going to embrace the emptying process here. So, if you get nothing else out of this talk, this is about 47 times I'm going to say that. This is something to really consider: is where can you make some subtractions? Where can you make some edits? And it's really kind of like a cleanup, if you will, to help make some room for some new things coming in that will really help you. I would be remiss if I did not talk about the topic of healthy boundaries. And those who know me know that I tend to pitch this wherever I go because I see such problems with this, a lack of boundaries. And so in this day and age, especially with what's going on right now, we need to have some really good boundaries. So let's talk about what boundaries are just for a second. And again, this should all be a reminder of what you already know. But boundaries are appropriate behaviors. And they can be with regard to finances, eating habits, technology habits, social media, exercise, sleep, relationships. I mean, they're across the board for everything, really. And so, but we talk about appropriate behaviors because a lot of times we miss the mark and we do things that are inappropriate. That's part of being human. But if we keep doing them, then that becomes bad habits. And that's what we want to try and address right now, is not to continue those. You know, I often talk about the fact that the first time you hear about healthy boundaries is when your parents or grandparents give you some rules to live by. And it might be like things like, you know, you got to go to bed by 8 o'clock or 9 o'clock, or no cell phones at the dinner table, things like that. Well, these are rules to help navigate your life so that you don't end up getting cluttered, if you will, you know, mentally and emotionally. And so there's a purpose for this. They give structure. Healthy boundaries give structure. They give stability. And in the course of our lives, we need to have that. Otherwise, we know we'd be an amoeba. For those of you who have heard me talk about this, sometimes I use a slide where I tend to have a picture of a cell, and every cell has a cell membrane. The cell membrane basically is the gatekeeper of what goes in and what comes out. But really what the cell membrane is a healthy boundary. Because if things in the inside of the cell went outside, like, you know, the nucleus, we'd be in trouble. So the cell membrane is like a double entendre, because the brain is the intelligence that allows things that are inside to stay inside and things that are outside to stay outside, unless, of course, they need to come inside, like, you know, oxygen or glucose for energy metabolism, that kind of thing. I'm not going to go into cell physiology here, but you get the idea. So why are healthy boundaries so essential? Well, they're essential because we need some structure and stability, but they also need to be flexible. You know, and that's going back to the cell membrane. Every cell membrane's got receptor sites to, you know, the intelligence of letting things in and letting things out. And so our healthy boundaries can't be so rigid that we go bonkers when they are violated. We need to have some flexibility. By the same token, we need to have healthy boundaries. And I see a lot of people that don't. I mean, the fact that you can sit on a couch and watch 14 episodes of Schitt's Creek, you know, that would not be a healthy boundary. It's a great show, but not all at once. So I'm going to put a little suggestion out there to you, and that is that where can you pull the reins in? Healthy boundaries basically is having a sense of empowerment with your life. And in this day and age where basically all the rules have been broken, you know, you can't go back to work because of social distancing, you can't do this, you can't do that. So all of a sudden now, home and work are the same, and home and school are the same for a lot of kids. We want to establish some healthy boundaries so that we don't feel like we're being walked over. And when you are walked over, then there's this idea of victimization. And notice that word comes up a lot with change, a lot with stress, a lot with all of this, because when you feel like things are going pretty good, of course you're not going to be feeling like you're a victim. But when all hell breaks loose, the ego is like, why is this happening to me? And again and again and again. So healthy boundaries help negate the sense of victimization, because you've got some structure, you've got some guidelines there. And this is very, very important. And so I want you to feel comfortable saying the expression healthy boundaries. Now, I came across this book that says The Year of Saying No. That's actually an example of healthy boundaries. But I think we also need to have healthy boundaries with ourselves. When you're a kid, your parents make the boundaries for you. But when you're an adult, no one's doing that except for you. You've got to have some of your own sense of ideas of, you know, what you think is healthy and what's inappropriate and draw a line between the two. So healthy boundaries are essential. And in this day and age, even more so with what's going on. So I just want to share with you a couple more things I think are very important. When this all happened a year ago, I was thinking to myself, boy, the big message of the day is how do we adapt to the change we're going through? And, you know, I like the idea of looking at words, how they got their meanings and things, but I tend to hear the word change a lot when people talk about stress. And as a consequence of this, you know, it's no secret that the word change and stress are synonymous, often used interchangeably. And by and large, people do not like change. They don't like change they can't control. That's a biggie. And so we're in times of great change right now, tremendous change. And I could be wrong with this. I hope I'm wrong with this, but there's more change coming. That's just inevitable. You don't need to be a psychic to figure that out. But we have lots of change coming away. And I think the best we can do is adapt to it. Now, ironically, the word adapt is another way to say change. But in this case here, you're changing with the change. You're not fighting the change. You're not trying to fight the tide, if you will. So adaptation is really key. And the people who have studied the adaptation the most are people in the grieving counseling field and also a lot of people who had physical disabilities, because all of a sudden now you can't walk the rest of your life. You got to adapt. You're alive, but you're not going to just sit in the corner the rest of your life. You got to adapt. And so I thought what I'd do is take you through what I call our seven steps for adaptation. And we could also add this phrase to stay above the fray. And the fray is getting pretty thick right now, pretty cloudy. And so we are best to really stay above it. So let me walk you through these and see if you can, if you want, take notes on this and just ask yourself, where can I put some attention so that I feel as if I am adapting well to the changes that we're encountering right now. So the first thing, first step is healthy grieving. Okay, we already mentioned that, so I'm not going to talk about that much more. But before you make any changes, you've got to grieve the loss of whatever it is you feel you've lost. In this case here, mostly freedom. That will come back. You're never going to lose that forever. Number two is acceptance. This is a huge part of the adaptation process, and actually also the grieving process too. You know, the typical expression, accept that which you cannot change and the wisdom to know the difference of what you can and cannot change. I'm going to invoke Reinhold Niebuhr's serenity prayer there. So there's some things we're not going to change. We're not going to change the fact that there's a virus floating around here. We're not going to change the fact that you can't travel out of the country until things return back to a sense of safety there. So we have to accept a lot of our limitations. And again, that's when you've had great freedom and then all of a sudden you've lost that. That would explain why a lot of people are really upset. But at some point we need to adapt. And that's what we're talking about here. The next step, number three, is how to stay grounded. And this perhaps I think is where you hear the suggestions on do this and do this and try this and stuff. And so again, before you do any of this, you got to actually do a few subtraction exercises so that you've got room for this. But ways in which to stay grounded. Before the pandemic, people were doing things like yoga and all kinds of activities. And those are things which typically help people stay grounded. So meditation is definitely an important thing. I'd like to put a big plug in for that. You know, you've heard the words about how important mindfulness is, and it's very true. But there's many ways to meditate. Mindfulness is just one of them. But also getting a good night's sleep is part of this too. Do you know, right now, when I heard about all the stuff with the pandemic, and I can tell you right now that I'm not a psychic, but I saw this coming down the pike. I mean, just take a look at some of the dynamics in the world, and it was inevitable that there'd be some kind of virus that was going to have the upper hand for a while. And so with this, you want to keep in mind, you want to have a healthy immune system. And one of the ways in which to have a healthy immune system is to get a good night's sleep. And what we now know is that people who don't sleep well tend to have a suppressed immune system. When you're sleeping is when your body is trying to reconfigure itself the next day. And by not getting a good night's sleep, you don't get a chance to check and increase the stability of the immune system. So sleep is very important, as is eating. We could spend hours talking about proper nutrition and stuff, and I'm not going to do that right now, but I do want to put forth the idea that we really want to make sure that we don't spend all day eating comfort foods. And in this day and age, when people are trying to seek comfort, it's great to have a little piece of chocolate or fill in the blank here, but we want to actually get into healthy boundaries with our eating habits. The big thing I want to put out right now is to avoid massive amounts of processed sugar. And one thing I'm hearing from my colleagues out in the field is that sugar definitely can impact the integrity of the immune system. And it also can affect a number of other things too. But for the most part, we want to, I would never say avoid all sugar. That's, I think, virtually impossible. I tried that once, and it's in everything. It's in salad dressings, it's in jellies, it's in everything. So just minimize it. Just healthy boundaries with this, and try and eat foods that only have natural sugars, not processed sugars, because that's where the real problems tend to come in. And number four says, access your resources. So in times of stress, what do you have that at your fingertips that you can actually help navigate the course of the winds of change? For most people, it might include things like time and money. Those are the two top resources people think of when they're asked this question. But it could also be people like, you know, friends and neighbors who you can rely on for a quick favor. Of course, in this day and age of social distancing, that may be compromised too. So what are your resources? And what are your inner resources? You know, I talked about things like a sense of patience, and a sense of humor, and a sense of optimism, sense of creativity. These are what we call, again, the muscles of a soul, but they're really your inner resources. Abraham Maslow called them the inner resources. And these are essential. And by the way, we all have these. It's not like they're only good for a certain number of people. There are birthrights for everybody. So what are your inner resources? I would say start making a list. So in the event that let's say this situation or some other situation comes up and causes you to ask yourself, how am I going to get through this? Do a survey of your resources. You know, what do you got? Make a list and then ask yourself, are there some that I'm not even aware of? Maybe ask other people to give you some insights on what theirs are or what they think yours are to help you with that. Things that can actually help you get your day done and done it with grace. Number five says create good strategies. So in the course of all this, you know, with closing down restaurants and grocery stores for limited hours and things like that, a lot of our life schedules were kind of put on end, and we had to kind of begin to navigate the new dynamics. And so we've got to make new strategies for this. I like to exercise and I swim a lot. And as a result of what was going on, the pool was closed for like 3 or 4 months. And when it opened back up, it was only allowed, you could only go swimming 3 times a week. So you had to pick your days and your times that you wanted to go because of social distancing. So all of a sudden now my strategy was I got to get back and exercise, and I got to do it at a time when there's availability, which was a little different than how it was before. You just show up and whenever you want and go swimming. Talk about freedom. So what are your strategies for this? And I know a lot of people can't travel. I know a lot of people are feel immobilized by these changes here. And for the most part, there's a reason for that. We're trying to actually get a good handle on this dilemma and deal with it. But what are some strategies you can do with this? And so maybe part of your strategy is to go for a walk in the nearest park every morning around sunrise. Maybe your strategy is to actually call up a friend as opposed to doing a video conference, but actually talk in person live like that. Or if you can't possibly go for a walk with a friend, you come up with the answers here. It's not good for me to kind of just toss out some things here, but ask yourself, what are some strategies to help you get through the day that lend itself to a sense of integrity and empowerment, not a sense of victimization? And then, as we say in all of behavior modification, number six is evaluate your progress. How are you doing with these things? And if they're working, great, keep them. If they're not, then let's get rid of them, subtract them out, and put something else in there that will help you with that. This is really important. Number seven is the last one, and that is celebrate your success. If you actually thought up a new idea for dinner one night as opposed to your typical three-meal repertoire, then congratulations. Give yourself a pat in the back and celebrate your success. And I'm talking about, you know, small little goals to do. Of course, the bigger they are, then all the more power to you. But in this case here, what are some of your successes? And if you got your exercise in for the day, congratulations. That is a great success. If you sat in nature for a little while, if you did some yoga in the morning, just a couple of asanas to stretch, congratulations. These are good things. Because in this time of feeling apathetic and overwhelmed, and loss of energy or lack of energy, to do even a few things like that is a huge, huge accomplishment. I tell you right now, I have a friend who went through a serious health issue, and he lost his ability to exercise for about a good 5 months. And when he got back into it, he could barely walk around the block without breathing really hard. And so, but it was baby steps. And so I want to encourage you to think of this idea of don't try and conquer the whole world every day. Just a small, small step in that direction is the way to do that. Well, as you all know, we've been tested. We've been tested for the past year, and the tests are still coming. They're not done with yet. And what I'm sensing from talking to some of my colleagues in this field of health psychology is that there is a mental health crisis. And mental health, you know, is the spectrum is huge of what that might include. But we hear a lot of the word trauma lately. And for a lot of people going through this change right now, this is traumatic. And what we're going to see when we get out of this is various levels of PTSD. But I think part of that healing process is to heal the trauma now by having a sense of empowerment with it so that we don't give our power away to it. And that is so very, very important. So I want to ask you right now, think to yourself of this metaphor that in stress management, we talk about our lives are like a bridge. And there's two things we can do to deal with the stress we encounter every day. Number one is to strengthen the structure of the bridge so it can withstand greater weight crossing it. But number two is lighten the load so we don't have as much heaviness going across the bridge. So part of strengthening the structure, my question to you is, what do you do to take care of your physical health and your mental health and your spiritual health, your emotional health? What do you do in terms of your habits for eating, your habits for sleeping, your habits for exercise? What do you do in terms of your immune system? All of those things tend to promote a healthier immune system, and that is key right now to do that. But also lighten load, how not to take on responsibilities in even, I guess, mental, emotional states that can deplete our energy. And there's something I really want to emphasize here, and that is the idea about replenishing your personal energy. That's one reason why they spend so much time talking about get outside in nature, because nature is a great replenisher of energy. And I think that we need to keep that in mind and see what we can do to get outside again, because this is essential. All these things I'm talking about really come down to self-care. And you may have heard that term before, self-care. If you have, good, because we need to hear more about that, taking care of ourselves. And it doesn't mean just, you know, filling a glass of champagne or lighting a candle and taking a bubble bath. Those are great if you can do them. But really, the idea is, what can we do to take care of ourselves so we don't give our power away? And we don't, I think Carolyn May says, we don't hemorrhage our energy. So all of this comes down to a topic of resiliency. And that's the big buzzword right now, is resiliency. How resilient are you? And this is the word that we're using for whatever reason, because people don't like the word stress anymore, probably because of so much of it. But resiliency really speaks to the idea of coming back, bouncing back, rising back up from the surface of the water and catching your breath. And the reason why resiliency is so important right now is because this has been a huge knockdown to the ground, and we need to get ourselves back up, as the expression goes, or the song says, dust yourself off and start all over again. I think we all have that ability to do that. So resiliency is a number of things to a great many people, but a lot of people think it tends to be strength and endurance. And yeah, that's part of it. But we also know that there's a sense of faith and a sense of hope about things too, that things are going to get better. And of course they are. I think anyone who's been this long enough knows that nothing lasts forever. Every storm has an ending. And after the storm, skies are clear and it's beautiful. So we are going to get through this. But we need to actually prepare ourselves for when it does arrive, are we there to take advantage of it? And another thing about resiliency, we could spend all day on this too, but just to kind of put a little plug in here, is that a sense of humor is so very, very important. You know, I do a lot of talks on resiliency, and I kind of check up on the research and see what's being said out there and stuff. And it's kind of funny because there's some people who say that there's three keys for resiliency. And then I've seen someone else says there's seven steps for resiliency. And someone else has a book about the eight principles of resiliency. And then I notice the numbers keep going up as I say this. I saw as many as 60 aspects for resiliency. I don't think we actually know all of them. There's more than three, that's for damn sure. But it turns out that in all of these lists, everybody includes a sense of humor. Humor is critical to how we navigate our lives. And so I want to put a big plug in for a sense of humor and how we can tickle our funny bone. And I know what some of you are probably thinking, like, you know, that's the last thing I can even think about right now. I'm so exhausted. I'm so overwhelmed. But this is a choice, and we actually can choose whether we actually begin to see things as being ironic or incongruent or funny or not. And so I want to put a big plug in for that as well, because a sense of humor is essential. So having talked about this for a little while here, ask yourself, what are your thoughts about how to adapt? There's a wonderful quote from a philosopher, Nietzsche, who says, that which doesn't kill me makes me stronger. And I think that was even turned into a country song. I don't know if it was Tim McGrath did it. I don't know. But anyway, someone did. But the message is this. We will endure through this, and we will come out smiling. I have no doubt. And I also have no doubt there's more stressors on the way. So how do we accommodate this? How do we meet the challenge? I think first with a sense of knowing that we have the ability to do this. We have the means within us to do this. And so that I take great comfort in. I also want to mention this whole idea of energy again, about how not to deplete our energy, because being depleted with energy is not going to help anybody with anything. It's problematic. So what are some things you can do to raise your energy? You know, we talk about this idea of raising your vibration, but it's little things like listening to some of your favorite music. It's things like starting a tickler notebook. Some of you know my ideas about that. Start looking for funny cartoons, funny JPEGs and such. You know, we just got done with an event last week, the inauguration, and those of you who saw Bernie Sanders sitting in a chair with his mittens know that there are a great many people who actually, with a great sense of humor, were cutting and pasting Bernie out and photoshopping him into some of the classic movie scenes of all time. I kind of tell you, I laughed. I giggled. Oh my God, I'm still laughing at some of the stuff I'm seeing right now. I mean, like, you know, from The Lion King to The Sound of Music to The Lord of the Rings to The Wizard of Oz, Bernie has become famous as an icon of I Was There Too. Sense of humor is very important as part of that resiliency. And the idea is of giving some energy to yourself. I mean, when you laugh, you're definitely filling up your energy sources. I mean, that's how I feel anyway. So one of the things I would tell you suggest is that learn to become your own best audience. We are in a time right now where we've got to learn to laugh at ourselves. Just there's no other choice. What can you do to try and find at least one funny thing a day? And that's one of my things I do is try and find one funny thing a day. And when you do this, I guarantee you're going to find more than one funny thing a day. You're going to find lots of them. So these are just some ideas that I like to share with you about how to cope in these crazy times that we're in. And the key word is adaptation. And another key word I think I want to re-mention is the idea of healthy boundaries. We don't want to give our power away. We don't want to give our energy away. And the ways in which to do that is to have a sense of vision with where we're going. And again, some subtraction so we don't feel overwhelmed with all the stuff coming away. We need to actually have a sense of balance. And that's what this really comes down to, is all a sense of balance. So just a couple of thoughts, reflections in this fireside chat about coping with stress in crazy times. Again, reminders of what you already know. But in times of stress, we tend to forget these things. So I think it's good to hear them again. Some ageless wisdom and some nice insights on how to help navigate our lives so that we don't become shipwrecked in the course of all these winds of change that are coming our way. So thanks again for listening, and we'll talk soon. Take care. Bye-bye.